Welcome to Taking Stock. It's November 13th, and you know it's a busy month so far, but we're excited to keep this going. A bit of a lighter topic today, I think, compared to the last 2 weeks of deep dives into the digital asset reports from some major players in our government and financial infrastructure. We've got John Wooten here, and we're going to be joined by Valentine, an incredible retail investor who's involved in the Stellar communities and also involved in the perspective on the markets from someone who's interested to grow their wealth but recognizes some of the shortcomings of the system. So while we're getting them settled in, welcome both of you guys. I'm also looking forward, John, to hearing about some of the stuff you've been working on over on our public projects on GitHub. But thanks so much, everybody, for stopping in.
Of course, Chives. Thanks for the introduction and welcome, Valentine. A lot of work these last few weeks around some of the trading systems in place on the Stellar blockchain, and just continuing, over the years, we build all these compliance systems on top of it to make the SEC's job a little bit easier. And now we're, I get to do some work to make sure that it really works the most efficiently that it can for the network. And that's actually how I met Valentin. We're in a collaborative discussion amongst the community on some of the best practices and methodologies that we could take into some protocol upgrades across the ecosystem. I see here they are maybe joining in as a speaker. Can you unmute there, Valentine? You got a good connection?
I think I'm muted.
I can hear you there.
Okay, I'm going to mute myself now.
Yeah, well, welcome. Nice. Good. Tested and working.
Yes, it's very nice to meet you. I understand that you are quite familiar with a lot of the shenanigans that have been going down for quite some years now on Wall Street. Are you in a good place to talk, Valentine?
Yeah, I can speak. Can you hear me clearly?
Yeah.
Perfect, yeah. So just quickly, I think entry point for most people was 2021 January. I was about the AMC crowd of people, which was just like, what the fuck is going on? I don't know if you guys ever heard of him, but a guy called Lou versus Wall Street basically broke down how in the 90s, when the whole of Wall Street was becoming basically like computerized, digitalized, instead of the phone calls and like the pieces of paper, that's when they started to like fuck with shares and make them, synthetic. And like, it's obviously like an old trick, but now in 2021, he basically explained that they basically took it to another level. So since then, I've just been looking at those markets in a different light and, looking at the crypto markets in a different light. So yeah, that's my story.
And did the way that they sort of mess around with how the stocks were accounted for, did that influence your perspective on the blockchain ecosystem?
Yeah, because simply they just can't mess with blockchain. And they basically have to like participate in it fairly. And that's the risk, because usually those institutions have the power concentrated in them, but that's the reward for the people. And yeah, it makes it, for me, have a positive outlook on blockchain.
And one thing in our conversation that came up was a little bit of how politics interweaved with kind of Wall Street and crypto. And do I understand, do you think that we have some potential to break into these incumbents and sort of displace their positioning, or how do you feel about that?
I think, definitely. I think it's already happening. There's one asset managers called Franklin Templeton, and they have like $300 million in tokenized assets. I mean, there's this American investor of Skylake Capital. I think he's like 30% of his like a hedge fund or whatever is in crypto assets, So like you have to just look at the institutions, they're starting to move to this technology. And they have to see big money's moving into it, you know. So as soon as I think it's done with the like SEC and things like that, I think Wall Street is going to have to adopt these different technologies for just to keep up with everyone.
Wow. Does that make sense to you, Chaz? Quite an expansive perspective.
Oh, sure. I think that we're definitely on the same page there. You know, these technologies represent such a massive paradigm shift that there's either going to be a forced adoption or there's going to be a forced obsolescence, you know, through stubbornly trying to hold on to the old ways. There are big questions about how long that takes and what sort of shape that transition takes, how quickly it happens, and who the competitive names in the space are going to be. But just from a top-down perspective of, you know, which ledger technology is better than the other, I don't think there's any contest or question either.
Yeah, nice to meet you, Charles. I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to meet you too. I appreciate your coming by. And I understand also that you're involved in the Stellar ecosystem. You know, speaking about different blockchains, naturally there's, you know, thousands of different projects, more all the time. And Stellar is a particularly fascinating one. So I'm curious to hear from, you know, in your words, your connection with that project, what makes it unique to you, deserving of your time, and you know, how you view its role in this impending transition that that we all see as inevitable.
Yeah, I was just trying to sum it up. So, like, Stellar's really focused on like a peer-to-peer transactions. And, you know, in order to do that, they're basically like the fastest blockchain and the most efficient blockchain. So, like, blockchains like a Bitcoin and Ethereum, they basically cost more money to do the transactions that Stellar can do at a cheaper rate, and Stellar can ensure they can keep it cheaper, which means they can scale up like quite rapidly and be adopted by, you know, different type of off ramps quite quickly. So in terms of that, I think that Stellar's like, for me, I came into Stellar because of Lou again, and he basically said, because this is like the best technology, like, you know, like invest in it. So, you know, I put a bit into it, but then I started to like wonder, like, in my own life, okay, what am I actually going to do? So I just went on the website and I saw the computer programming. I originally studied law, but I just decided to, you know, switch it to some programming. You know, I've been learning in the ecosystem for 6 months now. You know, like, I know the technology is superior to how traditional banks do things. And I know the technology also has far-reaching applications, you know. So, like, it really can transform how people are, you know, like, working together. And Stellar, like, literally offer quite a lot of, like, money and funding and support for basically good ideas because, you know, so it's kind of like a no-brainer. And plus they're seeking, like, a transparency. So, yeah, just in terms of, like, I think you're asking about how, like, it ties into, like, you know, like, changing this whole system. I think there will be a lot of chains doing different things, like, on the system. Like, I'm also interested in different cryptos like XRP and XDC. I think XDC in particular will be used on Wall Street to, like, certify their financial transactions. And because, you know, obviously that's, like, an issue. So I think, like I said, I just think these, like, institutions are just going to have to basically be forced to adopt it. And I think that might come quicker with Trump.
Would you mind talking a bit more about that? I think you're just on the surface of something huge right there.
Yeah, I think in my perspective, everyone has an opinion on Trump, but I feel like he represents chaos in a good way. He represents change, and it's kind of necessary, you know, just on the planet for human beings to just have like a catalyst for change and a catalyst for chaos, you know. Chaos not in a bad way, but chaos just being the opposite of the status quo. So it's not necessarily a bad way. That's my opinion on him. You know, some people say, you know, he's downright good or bad or whatever. You know, he's a human being and we're all human beings at the end of the day. So anything
technical difficulties there. Twitter ended the first space for some reason, just kind of ended, not sure why. So started up another one here. Must be waiting for our guests to return.
Yeah. I don't know what happened there. Oh, no, no worries, no worries. X spaces are so, like, temperamental, literally.
They certainly can be. I think you were just in the middle of a thought when it cut us out.
Yeah. Thank you guys for letting me voice these thoughts out, because, you know, it's been a long, many years, and I think everyone here has stories to tell about, you know, their journey to, up to this point into the future, so... Thank you. It was just about Trump. So literally just to finish it off before. I think he's just going to shake things up. And I think he's going to look at every aspect of the US government and, you know, start hiring and firing people. And that's what he does. That's what he does as a businessman. And that's going to divide the country, because at that level, when you start hiring and firing people, that's when chaos ensues, because we know a lot of these people have, you know, their families tied to the government. They have their histories, their friends, their, you know, just like any institution, you know, it gets corrupted. And, you know, there's no reason to think every government is corrupted, you know, but there's no reason to think there's not a corrupted aspect of the American government. And, you know, like I said, Trump's going to hire and fire people, and that's going to have knock-on effects for how crypto is looked at in the world. And I think it's already been shown as positive, like, completely. Like, he's endorsing it. He's endorsing crypto. And I think that's what's going to lead to the adoption of the technologies quicker. He's a catalyst, and I think it's positive for crypto and kind of what we're fighting for.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting to see what a transition in terms of the public rhetoric that we've seen Trump undergo in the last several years. Now, naturally, it's there's nothing wrong with adjusting positions over time. You know, it's possible that he learned more about the technology in general and has become more welcoming to it. But one thing that I think is that I think about often, so I'm curious to get your thoughts, is I try to differentiate between crypto, as in, you know, blockchain technology applied in terms of a currency or a valued token that is representative of either just the token itself or an underlying asset, et cetera, versus, you know, blockchain as a technology in its own right that could be used for, you know, transparency or for like quick transmission of independently verifiable data, things like smart contracts or plain text metadata on transactions, things like that. Sometimes I have a lot of hesitance because I think a lot of the crypto positivity, which certainly we're awash in right now, if we look at the, you know, the variety of different coins, you know, Bitcoin, of course, leading the charge as usual, growing largely in market cap in just the last week or two. But do you think that directly will lead into blockchain's integration as a source of transparency, as a way to solve a lot of the problems of, you know, alleged corruption or alleged embezzlement or, you know, quid pro quo that might exist in our governments and in other capacities? Or do you see what I'm saying, that there might be some distinctions between the, like, financial, like, value connection as that grows and as that interest grows versus the other capabilities provided by the technology?
I kind of... just let me know if I answer it correctly, because I'm thinking how to answer it now.
Well, there's no right answer, so don't worry about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let me know if you get what I mean. It's like, I feel Trump will go into the scene and he'll... Basically, what I'm talking about is Gary Gensler. Like, Gary Gensler needs to get out, and it needs to happen in a legal way. I don't think this recent hype is basically what is a start of the blockchain or whatever. I do think it is hype. It is Trump's in and blockchain's positive. But what needs to happen is in the courts, it needs to be deemed that, you know, these important coins are this, these important coins are that. And most importantly, like I'm, you know, like I said, from the Stellar Network, like that's where I have my most understanding about this technology. you know, XLM and XRP, they have to be deemed as a technology, not a security, because, you know, when they're basically a technology instead of being a traditional security, that's when it's like lifted, the sanctions on that use is lifted. And that's when you can see mass adoption of institutions, you know. For now, they're just like slowly getting adoption, but that's because XRP, which is a similar technology to XLM in terms of it being focused on cross-border transactions, XLM's on peer-to-peer, XRP's on more like a government or more like big institutions, whatever. But as you see those court cases become more successful, more in favor of crypto, then I do think that's when crypto is going to have its proper high rise, its proper almost instant overnight, you know, this is a technology valuable, this institution just came online, this institution just came online, this institution came, just came online, especially for things like XRP, especially for things like XDC, which have the potential to have this mass adoption. So like, just to conclude, right now, I think this is complete hype. I do expect to pull back, but, you know, that's just me saying, you know, whatever, anything could happen. But I think as Trump shakes up the system, so as he looks at Gary Gensler and looks at what he's doing and says, no, I don't want him, let's try and get him out, whatever, that's going to have effects on those important court cases that basically allow the proper use cases of crypto, which is basically an efficient way of transmitting money, which everyone wants at the end of the day, to actually start being adopted.
I gotcha. Yeah, thank you for that. It looks, sounds like you've got a nuanced and really patient regulatory perspective when it comes to how that adoption needs to put one foot in front of the other, which is a huge part of it. Absolutely right. It's funny to me sometimes, and John, hop in. I think you've got some thoughts on this too. But, you know, considering just that, you know, blockchain, distributed ledger is itself an open source tech that, as you just were describing, is has massive cross-border applications. But then you've got, you know, of course, America markets, and they are the largest in the world. They're movers, shakers, leaders in many of these regards. So it's funny to think that even though it's an international technology that, you know, in some ways belongs to everyone, just that because of the way that the system has been built to work so far and where the money is focused and capitalized, we need still to wait for, you know, and are kind of at the whims of how things are end up being labeled and regulated.
I think, yeah, that's most important for them to really have power.
And do you see, Valentine, a lot of the cross-border or like some of the international anchors on Stellar, for instance, kind of helping to accelerate the transition? Or are you familiar with how they're sort of trying to replace some of those, you know, non-American banking systems, basically?
I see like, because I'm only just like understanding like the programming. I haven't even like even understood like the proper financial like aspects of it. Like, you know, someone who's built a market maker for it, or someone who's built like these, you know, just a replacement for how traditional finance works, but on the Stellar network. I'm still just trying to even understand the peer-to-peer smart contracting aspect, you know. But so I think in terms of it just being used in that aspect, I can't really answer. Yeah, I'm not too sure about it.
That's okay. I love that you built a market making bot. That's really interesting. I think that's how some of our initial conversation started, was around the DEX and Stellar and some of the trading aspects with it. Have you worked a lot around with that and seen some of the trading happening directly on the blockchain?
Oh, no. Apologies. I haven't worked on a bot, but I know like Stellar has applications for like automated market making.
Yeah. That's what a lot of work. Oh, go ahead.
Because it's like fast and cheap, it does have those implications to like kind of replace how people like transact assets. Like, you know, it can be used for tokenization. So instantly, someone in America who owns a tokenized asset in Thailand can give it to someone in China, you know, on a decentralized platform type of thing. And that can happen instantly, you know, through the use of smart contracts. So, yeah.
But where's that going to leave all the banks?
There's going to be a lot of people, so there's going to be enough, you know, fucking loans and things they can give out to keep themselves going. But those people, because it's a technology, you know, I'm not too sure about this, but this is how Lou explained it. As these institutions, like, literally need the coin's going to be going up in price. And because it's more efficient, because more transactions are happening over the network compared to something like Bitcoin or Ethereum, those coins do have the potential to surpass the value of Bitcoin and Ethereum. So XRP, XLM, you know, above 25K, you know, up to 200, 500K, if institutions do mass adoption. Because as soon as you get the, as soon as you get the financial system, but then you get the derivatives layered on top of it, you know, then you get, you know, the world wealth being in the quadrillions and things like that, you know. So, and then if you're transacting that on the XRP blockchain, if you're now saying that, well, if you actually look at a country like this, they're actually way more wealthy because on the blockchain they have all these assets, you know, instead of like doing the traditional US dollar inflation bullshit system for everywhere in the world, you know, then that's when those coins actually have that world like power value. That was his theory on it. So, you know, I don't know how far they can go, but yeah, I do think they are big coins because they're just better technology. And it's just, you know, as soon as you realize, okay, this is actually better than how people are doing it anyway, it's kind of easy to be like confident in that.
Well, it sounds like you have an eye for efficiency, Valentine. Thanks so much for sharing. Wow. What an incredible perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm curious to know, so with all this in mind, you kind of started out the conversation earlier. You mentioned, you know, that 2021 was an activator moment from the retail investor side for you. Were you involved in blockchain or familiar with this technology before then? Or did one thing kind of lead to the other, kind of in that sense, after the events with the, you know, the buy button and the brokers and banks in 2021?
Yeah, certainly one thing led to the other. So it was like getting into AMC, looking at the two CEOs in particular, Ryan Cohen for GME, then you had Adam Aron for AMC, and seeing how, although Adam Aron portrayed to be like the friend of the retail investor, he screwed the retail investor completely. He literally made a fake stock that had like 900 million units, the same as the real stock, and diluted it to fuck. The real stock didn't even have 900 million units, but the real stock got 900 million units. Then he made a fake stock with 900 million units and sold it to fucking hedge funds. So he fucked the retail investor. Then you see, someone like Ryan Cohen, they went through the same like fallout of this meme stock craze, the same hype. But you see how Ryan Cohen handled it. You see how Adam Aron fucked it up. So then as an individual, I was looking, okay, Wall Street's a fucked place. Wall Street, you know, no one's your friend really. But at least you see Ryan Cohen, you know, working hard for the company and trying to basically make GameStop survive, which he did. He took it from $2 to, I think it's like $28 now. And that's obviously more if you were with the splits and whatever. But Adam Aron, I think AMC's like fucking $4 and you're diluted to fuck. It's insane. Like, it's criminal. It's criminal completely. But from there, I kind of understood, okay, the blockchain is a fair way to do this, but I didn't really understand it too much until, like I said, I was watching this guy called Lou versus Wall Street. He explained XLM, XRP. I looked at XLM, XRP, like, in terms of, okay, how can I invest with them? And I just went on the website. I looked at, okay, how does the computer programming work in this? What are all the aspects of it? And yeah, now I'm just in the ecosystem. And I can like agree that the technology is better, but it's interesting to see how they want to brand themselves and spread out. Because, you know, you also got the nerds and the tech people who made it. And you've got the marketing team who are trying to tell everyone about this wonderful technology. And somehow they have to make a marriage to make it work. So it's interesting to see that aspect.
Yeah, it's definitely an uphill battle when it comes to helping folks become comfortable just with learning about what is going on under the hood when it comes to distributed ledger and how the distribution of trust away from a central entity can provide for so much efficiency improvement. It's definitely a difficult thing just because humans are not used to thinking about trustless trust in that way. There's typically some kind of singular body, what be they person or institution, at the core of our systems of transaction, always has been thousands of years. And so it's a whole change in the chemistry beyond a change in the technology, which is kind of my way to forgive a lot of folks for their hesitance when it comes to really diving in feet first.
Then I feel it's almost kind of natural. I mean, if we look at the way the world's going, for example, we look at what happened in Ukraine. The first day of Ukraine, we said that, okay, we need to protect Ukraine, we need to defend Ukraine. At the end of the day, Ukraine's been increasingly occupied. So like that type of reassurance that the West would usually be able to give, it wasn't able to do in Afghanistan, wasn't able to really do in Iraq, in the Middle East, it's still a war-torn area. Now in Gaza, in Israel, Israel's been allowed to do whatever the fuck it wants to get its revenge back on the terrorists. At the end of the day, Israel are like any other human beings that need to survive on the planet. No one's better than an IDF soldier, I think. So that's my opinion on it. But it's terrible what's going on there. We see these countries becoming more and more individualistic, more and more belligerent, more and more like willing to go to war. Although, the media tries to portray it in general.
And how do you connect that kind of individualistic, just this aggressive, selfish foreign policy back to this new technology? Because you mentioned it's like the way of the world, but I'm just curious how you draw the bridge. Like, does that help us get to a better place, or is that emblematic of why we need to get to a better place?
I think it gets a better place for individuals having basically the power over their own wealth, and countries finally having the power over their own wealth. Because I think the US dollar like dictates a lot of how our countries are represented on the world global stage. And with these decentralized technologies, not only can an individual say, I own these assets here, they on the blockchain, that's my house, my car, that I own them. Not only can all individuals kind of say that efficiently, institutions can say that as well. So, I think, it will be.
I gotcha. Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot more sense. And I think you're completely right. It provides those additional freedoms, not just for individuals, but for communities and nation states alike. Really, as long as we're minimizing on the intermediaries that profit so much from being involved in the management and transfer of value, and without actually contributing anything otherwise, then I think we're getting to a better place through that as well.
Yeah. It's like it is a new intermediary in a way, but it's like just a more transparent one. And, we can only do better than make it more transparent. And at the end of the day, it's clear to loads of people, not just to us who are in 2021, that things can be made more efficient, more transparent, and more fair. So just the natural human tendency will be to go to it just because it's better for everyone, really.
What do you think, John? Do you see it going the same way?
Yeah, with you there, Valentine and Chais. It is quite the paradigm shift, as you implied, to going from infrastructure that is built, owned, and operated by corporations and central intermediaries to finally a system that is by the people, for the people, and governed of the people. Just a completely different paradigm when you understand all of a sudden that there really is no person that controls any, you know, the vast majority of these networks, or at least the good ones. And instead, it's really just based on some incredible people who have all collectively contributed decades of research and diligent open efforts into a code base that we can all use to really have a seat at the table at the end of the day, which is something that you really just can't have with these incumbent systems unless you have already such a massive legacy fiat stake that buys you into the influence requisite to even participate.
Yeah, well said. So Valentine, I'm curious. Oh, it's hard to ask you, just what else you might have wanted to bring up or share about that perspective.
I was just curious. Was it a specific perspective you wanted me to talk on, or I just had a general question for you guys as well?
Oh, I'd say you go ahead if you have a question for us.
Yeah, are you familiar with Bed Bath & Beyond and Ryan Cohen and things like this?
I've got a decent familiarity, I suppose, with some of the key things regarding it. Why do you ask?
Because, you know, there's also a theory that, if I just summarize it, that Bed Bath & Beyond was something that Ryan Cohen wanted for his company. He wanted it called Teddy, and Teddy was going to be an Amazon competitor, but it still can, well, it still is going to be an Amazon competitor. And the way it's going to do that is by basically taking over the skeleton of Bed Bath & Beyond. I think you guys are like American, so you're probably more familiar that, you know, those stores like closed in your country. So basically, since it's closed, there's been a bankruptcy case, and the investors in Bed Bath & Beyond, what's happened is that basically their shares have been cancelled. But as we know, these people love to naked short. They love to fuck with stocks. So in a bankruptcy, the shares can be cancelled, but the short positions and the shares aren't really cancelled until the final decree of the bankruptcy. And because the company's in bankruptcy, it can go through a set of processes at basically any time that someone can say, I want this company. And the reason why it can be beneficial to do that in the bankruptcy, especially for Bed Bath & Beyond, is because of these things called NOLs, which are basically net operating losses, something like this. And it's like, basically, you can offset the tax losses of buying out this company for bankruptcy. So it's attractive for like an entrepreneur or an investor to buy out. So basically, the conspiracy theory is that Ryan Cohen is going to buy out Bed Bath & Beyond from bankruptcy when it's all said and done. And, you know, if you've been following what they call court dockets, which are basically like legal dockets they release every time, you know, an estate is given 10, it's literally like bullshit. Every time an estate is given like $10, $100, like this whole case is a whole, it's a drag out process. Bankruptcy is the most bureaucratic process ever. But the idea is when it's all said and done, Ryan Cohen is going to buy out this company at a certain price that is going to vaporize the shorts. He's then going to merge this company with GameStop. You know, Roy and Kitty is going to come back. He's going to play a role in it. At the end of the day, Roy and Kitty, he talks about now's the time for transformation in his stream. So I don't know what he knows, but Roy and Kitty is going to play a role in this. And he's basically going to transform GameStop and Bed Bath & Beyond and all these other companies into Jamerica, basically an Amazon competitor. And you know, if we know the 2021 saga, we know that a lot of these companies that went down was because of Amazon's basically brutal, competitive corporate nature. And, you know, so I hope I kind of explained that. And I wondered if you guys were familiar with it to that extent or how much you knew about it. Because like we were talking about, like where have we like gone with this? Like this is also another aspect of this whole saga in 2021 that I feel is still continuing, that I'm a part of. So, yeah.
Right. Well, thank you for sharing your perspective on the history and some of these developing theories. I guess in brief, I would just answer you by saying that I try broadly to focus on facts and on the actual structure of the market as we can verify it. And how we, you know, how we can effectuate change from a grounded, and legally functionable perspective. I understand there's a large community of people that are interested in what is happening with that Chapter 11. And it is technically possible for creditors to provide an alternative plan, which, is something that would need to happen, but that possibility has always been there and will continue to be there until the judge's gavel draws a close on the case. And the current plan does not allow for any kind of capitulation or realization of assets on the part
heard
of
that before.
So it would need to change. And while that's possible, I'm just not a person who spends a lot of time thinking about the theory, because there's so much, in my view, real active work to be done helping people achieve ownership through direct registration or to better understand, emergent distributed ledger technology and so on. So I hope that I am familiar with everything you brought up, but I hope that illuminates my personal perspective on the matter.
Yeah, and I think you have a very respectful opposite perspective on the matter. At the end of the day, I feel like anyone who's sane kind of knows when it's over. And if you had been following the legal documents, the dockets, you can, like you said, and Richard was so charitable, you said there is a chance, but, it's complete theory that someone would ever want to buy it. I completely agree with you, that's complete theory. But again, because I'm more theoretical in that perspective, I see how the theoretical can even get into that ground level, realization. I mean, another bit of theory is that Carl Icahn is basically advising Ryan Cohen how to do this type of takeover and merger. And recently when Trump got elected, Carl Icahn said, this administration is the best, it's going to be a great administration for mergers and acquisitions. The kind of slow, sluggish process that Ryan Cohen is going through was because of a administration. They are also look at the legal system. So it is theoretical, but I guess, you have to be theoretical to really have, a solid confidence in it. And I appreciate your perspective a lot.
John, did you want to share anything about that?
Those aren't the topics I am too closely familiar with. And I love the focus on the court cases, Chives, and going through the exact docs, getting all the details. That's certainly the way to really get into the nitty gritty and have a solid understanding.
One thing that wasn't interesting is before the bankruptcy, people were asking, okay, should we DRS our shares? Should we DRS them? Still being theoretical about that shares, and you guys are probably going to laugh at that. And I'd never ever looked into DRS. I thought, if shit goes bad, they're going to get fucking sued again. But I think I've never looked into DRS. So I'm a complete ignorant fool on that perspective. But sorry, just to link it back to the Bed Bath and Beyond, people are asking should I DRS, and there are issues with a computer share, which is basically the platform that allows people to DRS. There are issues with Equifax, and then you're obviously probably familiar that they were switching their DRS holders, things like this, the companies that they were using to DRS. Like I said, I never DRS, I didn't focus on that, but I knew there was still something strange happening with DRS of BBBY shares. And again, that's another theoretical aspect. So what is DRS? Please explain that to me, the same way.
Sure. So I'm quite familiar with that also. In brief, you mentioned computer share, but that's not related to BBBY in any way. Every issuing company needs to have a transfer agent. That's the company they contract to track what is called the issuer ledger, which is the real-time accounting of the debits and credits, the changes in ownership of that issuing company's shares. In BBBY's case, their transfer agent was initially one called American Stock and Transfer Company, which it's not quite that they were transferring their contract into a different transfer agent. That's what I hear a lot, but that's not quite correct. It's actually that AST, the one they were using, and a second transfer agent called Equiniti were both acquired by a third party, a new business entering the transfer agent space. They're essentially a private asset manager, purchased both of these transfer agents and merged them together under a new umbrella. And that process was publicized in 2022 and was well underway when the BBY bankruptcy actually, when the Chapter 11 was filed. So although a lot of investors were surprised by it, it was something that was predictable, and there was some clear description about exactly what was going to happen and when, and the timelines for when you'd be able to newly access, your account with the transfer agent. It's just that those shares were canceled in the process of that merge. And so some people got paperwork, some folks didn't. I can, I'll disclose that I did own some BBBY shares at one time, and I did DRS those, and I did receive paperwork confirming that I'd done so. From my perspective, there was never any foul play in terms of the ownership or transfer agent perspective. It was just a consequence of timing and who they happened to be contracting with at the time.
Thank you for that perspective, because, like I said, I knew nothing about the DRS specifics at all. And, now I realize that was just a fucking, they were going through a merger and just BBBY had to, just have their bankruptcy at that perfect time of their merger. And that's what happened. And there was a lot of things like that were obviously hyped up and, just nonsense. And, it's good to now know that was just another hyped up nonsense thing, because when it is just hyped up nonsense, I don't start believing it. I do call it out. Like, now I'm just completely, oh shit. Where am I still in the room?
Yeah, no worries. I mean, okay. There's a lot of information out there, and it can be difficult for folks to find it. I mean, it's not as though I've got any sources handy. I didn't realize the subject was going to come up, but I can guarantee you that if you look into it, you'll find what I described is about accurate.
Okay, yeah. I'm not diehard to it. Like, at the end of the day, the money's wherever the money is. Hopefully it's somewhere good, whoever has it. So,
yeah, I mean, I I don't really follow it very closely. I don't personally find value in following it closely, but I understand there's a community of folks that do, and nothing to disparage about that if that's what they are interested in. Certainly happy to share some of that information, and definitely, DRS is what we're really about here. YDRS.org is the operating website. If you want to check it out, try to learn some more and familiarize yourself, because if you if you have that blockchain background and you have some familiarity with the importance of custody, then I'm sure that you'll be interested to learn more about the different rights that you can regain through seeking custody of your shares and your stocks in different companies. And conversely, what things you give up by not having that custody. That's what DRS is ultimately about, finding the route to put those investments and those assets into your own name, directly on that issuer ledger that I'd mentioned before, which is managed by the transfer agent, and therefore having a direct relationship with the company, being able to confidently participate in shareholder democracy or engage in other communications with employees at the company, or access company documents like the shareholder list, or submit proposals, etc. That's the idea. If you're a long investor and you want to have a direct relationship, then this is the probably, I would say at least the best way to do so.
So do you believe in the MOAS, the short squeezing theory?
I believe it's also a theory, but I don't really think about that either. If someone wants to have a direct relationship with their company, then direct registration is the way to do it. That's that's pretty much where it I start and end. I try to have a holistic approach to the market.
Okay, I understand. Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say I'm obviously coming from the market from a totally different perspective of, you know, sell when it's high and maybe not the relationship with your company and what rights that afford to you.
Yeah, and in that case, it may not be the right decision for you because you do lose some flexibility when it comes to access to liquidity. If you happen to be DRS with certain transfer agents or, in certain scenarios, like there absolutely are advantages in terms of liquidity if you're only worried about, that rate of return on that entitlement, that you've got through your broker. As long as your broker is solvent and you trust that they'll deliver that cash equity, of course, then that definitely can be a better place for you to stay.
I mean, there's no way that your DRS shares could, you could ever have an issue with the holding agent, whoever owns them, when you wanted to sell them potentially.
So each transfer agent is going to have separate policies about how the selling process works. So we can get to that in a second. But the first part of your question, an issue with the holding agent, no, not really. The transfer agent could go bankrupt and it would not have anything to do with the issuer ledger or the value of those assets or who is listed to own them. They're just managing the data for the company. So it's of no consequence as far as that part of it goes. Now, the transfer agents do have different abilities to provide some liquidity to the investors of their clients. For example, ComputerShare that you brought up earlier is probably the most friendly to investors in terms of access to liquidity because they do have a sales facility and a subsidiary broker arm, which is able to pretty seamlessly move shares back into the market. And they can actually facilitate limit sells, which is something that very, very, very few other transfer agents are able to do.
I've seen a computer show be used a lot, the purple wheel. Some people even DRS and AMC, I think that was orange or something.
Well, right. So one important thing, I guess, just for you to know and for listeners who might not realize this to know is that you as an investor do not have any choice in what transfer agent you are going to be holding your shares through. The company that you are invested with has chosen a transfer agent for their shares. So if you invest with that company and you want to hold those shares in your own name, then you're going to use the transfer agent which they hired. In both AMC and GME's case, it is ComputerShare, along with a vast majority of other companies. ComputerShare is the market leader, you see. They've got they're the largest transfer agent in this world. And I think it's something like 2/3 of the S&P 500 use ComputerShare as their transfer agent.
Are they free to use for individual investors then?
Oh yeah, of course. There are some fees if you're going to buy or sell through their brokerage system, then there might be other fees, but to transfer using the direct registration system and to hold your shares there are no fees. There may be fees for the company, but you're not their client, right? Their client is GameStop or AMC or Microsoft or Apple or Disney. That's where they are going to pad their pocket the majority of the time.
Okay.
I mean, I love talking about that stuff. And if you're curious, I'm happy to, if there's anything else that comes to mind, or of course, check out again, that whydrs.org is we're trying to get approved as a 501c3 charitable nonprofit in the works right now. An operating decentralized nonprofit already. And trying to really push forward the education of this different stuff because a lot of folks don't know. I mean, the system is complicated and they don't realize that, you don't have legal ownership of the stock that you keep in whatever broker it is that you use.
So you say ComputerShare is like a, it's decentralized then.
No, they're a central entity. They're a for-profit company that's based in Australia.
Okay. So, okay, I see. But like, where does like their advocacy like kind of come into? Is it just to get people to like DRS like charitably in a way? Or like, is there like a policy or something you wanted, someone you wanted elected or something like this?
Well, there's two halves of that, I'd say. The first, just from an education perspective, just to help people realize that they have these options. And I know you described your own investing priorities and that maybe it is not the best choice for you, but there are other investors who perhaps, like, let's say there's an older person approaching retirement that's been holding the same stocks for a long time. Maybe they've been investing in Apple for 20 years and it's done well and they want to keep doing well. And so they want, you know, when it comes time for the annual general meeting, they're interested to participate and to try to vote towards whatever proposals they feel are going to create the most future growth, because that maybe is a bulk of their retirement portfolio. One really unfortunate thing about how the American stock system works is that, and you are probably, it sounds like, familiar with this from, you know, your other readings into various meme stocks, et cetera, is that it's very common for there to be more shares trading in the market than were issued by the company. And this is sort of an open accepted secret. So what does that mean for shareholder democracy? Because all of those extra shares are floating around in brokerage accounts. What that means is that many more votes get submitted than actually get passed on to an issuing company. Because like, let's say they have 100,000 shares issued, but there's 1 million shares trading. Maybe 50% of people vote, that's 500,000. By the time it gets to the company, after they're only supposed to have 100,000 votes. So there's a whole shadowy truncation process for that voting interest, which is very rarely audited. And brokers have a lot of freedom when it comes to deciding how they're going to pass on which votes to the tabulation company or to the issuing company. And so if you're holding in a broker and you're someone who wants to make sure that your vote has an impact because you value how the company is going to be acting in the future, maybe your financial incentives don't align with your broker. And so maybe you don't know that vote is going to be cast in the way that you want it to be cast and counted. But if you're a direct registered holder and you're voting directly with the company, you have a 100% guarantee that not only was your vote cast, it is going to count, and it'll count as, you know, one share, one vote, no questions asked, no shadows about it. So if that's important to an investor, you know, but they may not have never, they probably never realized that's how the system works. And that's part of what we're trying to change, make people more aware of that so they can DRS if they want to.
Okay, yeah, I see the total benefits of DRS and then, yeah, I mean, definitely just intersects with like blockchain, the idea of just, you know, actually owning what you say. And, you know, it's kind of a weird thing. Like when you're younger, you don't really think that's a problem. You don't have that concept of human interaction ever being like an issue. But as you get older, and you know, as you're looking to like rent a place, you're looking at to get a car, you're looking to do X, Y, and Z, you see like all these agreements and things that go into it. And you see like a major issue of, you know, how do you say someone owns something? You know, how do you define ownership? And it's interesting to learn that from the blockchain and DRS perspective now. Yeah, it's like it's the same fight, but like different areas.
Exactly. I think of it the same way. It's the very similar kind of thing. You know, one side's got the not your keys, not your coin, and the other side's able to say, you know, if it's not your name, it's not your share.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but that's kind of the danger of now, because I'm thinking, if I really believe in these technologies, I kind of have to believe in the physical holding of the assets as well. You know, how am I going to safely store something that potentially has so much value? Am I going to put it on an exchange, which at the end of the day has just got its own self interest? Am I going to put it on a physical ledger? You know, when I bring that technology into some type of physical object, you know, how does that alter how I consider my life, basically, you know, the things that you can do and the things you can't do. So yeah, it's really changing this idea of ownership. It can really be life changing. And
yeah, absolutely. I want for more people to have that realization just so they can have a decent chance at making an educated decision, because it is a very important decision, as you're pointing out. And a lot of folks are not, unfortunately, just based on the information that they have. And, you know, of course, you know, Fidelity or IBKR or Coinbase, you know, they're not going to be talking about like, oh, well, just put it into your own name, you know, because that right there is their money walking out the door. So, of course, they're not going to be advertising this stuff, but someone needs to.
Exactly. It's true. And they're going to be directly against it, you know. And again, you know, the theory of all these weird occurrences with computer share and GME. I mean, I didn't watch it completely because I never computer shared. I was ignorant on it. But like you said, there are explanations for it. But there is the sense that these institutions do not want people to obviously direct own their stock, their shares. And, you know, when that's a common narrative throughout the whole industry, you know, it just completely makes it, you know, just not allowed and just kind of like a taboo thing. It's something you have to convince people of when, you know, it should actually be the standard.
Right. Yeah, it would make a lot more sense if it were the standard. But, you know, it's a whole other topic. But the, you know, at one point, in some ways, the ownership under your own name was standard, at least for the stock market. I mean, and certainly with blockchain as well, you know, initially, there were not as many exchanges. In the case of stocks, you know, you had certificates that had, you know, lines on the back with your name on them. You know, it would get notarized. And if you wanted to sell it to someone, you know, your name would get crossed out, their name gets written on it. But it's a lot of paperwork. And so about 51 years ago, the central depository so cropped up in America, and the idea, you know, is that they pretty much were going to put all the certificates in one room and move them around on a piece of paper as necessary, so they didn't have to keep shuffling around the actual certificates. And over time, that has transitioned towards just a massive consolidation of equity, and it's a slow transition away from that, but as people realize they have a choice, then they can, of course, make that choice if it applies to them and makes sense to them and fits their need and their priorities, et cetera.
I agree. Yeah, there definitely is a narrative to be told about DRS. And I just think, it's only going to get more amplified. Because trust has just been lost with these institutions. It just is. So once you lose trust, you lose money. And, you know, trust is money at the end of the day. And if you have a more trustful way of ownership, it's just going to be more profitable. But you have to sell that trust, that narrative. And, you know, DRS has its own little niche. Blockchain has its own niche, and Stellar has its own little niche. And all of us are trying to expand this thing that we know is like intuitively correct, and we're trying to get to a better state of affairs. But, you know, it's like you're fighting against the force, really. But, you know, I guess that's what makes it interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, John, I'm curious if you want to hop in, because I know that, of course, Valentine just brought up our core interests of DRS, of blockchain, and, of course, of Stellar. So, you know, you've been quiet for a while. What are your thoughts on how we can really actuate some of this transition?
I think one of the most incredible things about a lot of this technology is how it organically grows. People get interested in it, sometimes on the financial side, but then they sort of dive into the education, figure out how it really works. And when it's all open source, it's just that much easier to really actually be part of the action. You can click that edit button on GitHub, you can make an improvement, you can have it go through a review process, and you can really be a part of the underlying technology. And that's why I was really excited by Valentine's work. As I understand it, Valentine, you've been learning HTTP and Rust, and just last week released a little onboarding smart contract tool for Stellar. Could you tell us a little bit about what the journey's been like for you getting into building on the GitHubs?
Thank you. yeah, it was just like my first programming project. It was in Rust, and now like I'm seeing Stellar more of a community to learn complex programming in like a real way, like Rust, like applied to like real life. And then from that knowledge, you can look at where, you know, other programming concepts and other languages, and just like an entry point for programming. So through that, like I just kind of try to like simplify my journey into like the Stellar ecosystem and understand, okay, you have the use case and you have the smart contracts, and you know, just kind of like telling like a story of how these smart contracts are helping people. Like I said, it was my first computer program. So like you kind of look back at it and you're like, what was that? And, you know, still learning, and like with programming, like it's endless, you know, the learning there, and it's more suited to me than like a law and things like that. And, you know, like you said, like you can make that update on the GitHub to your smart contract. You can tweak that transaction. You can make the UI of your app, you know, more like user friendly. You have the power to do that. And like, yeah, I'm just looking forward to learning that more and releasing more stuff on that. We'll see.
Well, I love the art collab and some very structured code, that's for sure. Great job on that one, Valentine.
Thank you.
What was your inspiration to start building things and go from just being a passive investor to actually wanting to partake a little bit more in the ecosystem?
For me, like, I guess I just have like a like entrepreneurial like drive and like aspect to me. And like by being a builder, like is kind of like a very like in the Stellar ecosystem, like the people that actually do the code, and like at the high level to, you know, the like the Rust engineers they have there. Like it's a very like specific niche of what they're doing. But then again, they have to link up with the marketing team to basically make this product of what all these big, you know, big brains, you know, people that did computer science at MIT, people that are PhDs and teach what they're doing into like a product for, you know, the world. And, you know, by getting into the ecosystem and starting to build instead of just being an investor, by, you know, going through that difficulty of actually using and understanding the technology and, like you said, you know, making it more efficient, making it better, coming up with not even coding, but just coming up with better ideas for how society can function on the technology. You also get a different aspect that, you know, obviously the builders don't get, the people just focusing on marketing don't get. You know, you get your Stellar, you know, story or your blockchain actual story, because it's, you know, it's quite straightforward to understand how to build on blockchain, and then, you know, you can go into computer programming and things like that.
Wow. So it was finding your own journey. And did you have help along the way? I know there's a big group around the Stellar West African Ambassadors that try to do some free education alongside it.
Yeah, that was definitely a big help, and especially in like terms of putting things into context, because I like to do things on my own, but any reference point that you can look back and or go to and just ask questions and be framed into context is like great. And there's been other builders that have come from that, like those just short classes, like it was still in its pilot phase, just those like short classes, you know, now they're starting to build and now they're starting to understand smart contracts. And like we know, like at the end of the day, this technology is about the ownership of things and the ownership of, you know, individuals over that, like say they own things. And nowhere is that more important than, you know, developing nations as they literally join the world economy, as they produce new products, as their resources are, you know, valued, and as these derivatives eventually come onto these developing economies, you know, like that idea of ownership is almost exponential in those places compared to the West. But so it was really good to basically be almost like I said, like at the ground level, seeing how this great technology can be used personally, but how it is also like also an investment technology opportunity for people. And, you know, you really feel that in the Stellar network. And, you know, you can just pick whichever aspect you want. You can do the computer programming, or you can, learn about the story of it and things like that. So it's a cool network, and who knows where the coin's going to go, but as long as it stays faster and better than everything else, then it's doing a good job.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm one of the things that excites me the most and has excited me the most for many years about the technologies, its ability to bring financial security and access to global liquidity to individuals and communities and markets that if they were to access it, which already was rare, it would be only through the sanction and guise of some larger entity which was scraping off the top, or probably actually digging deep into the top and only allowing, you know, a small bit of that equity to actually get out. It's something that the, you know, developed world has done to the developing world for all of human history. And I'm hopeful that this technology that is going to be one of the ways in which there can finally be some egalitarian economic approach to the way that these countries are looking to help their people, and those people are looking to help themselves and their communities.
Yeah, I think that would be the greatest story of these types of things.
And how do you connect with your community most generally, Valentine?
Mainly through Discord, I would say.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, and feel, you know, it's okay if you don't want to let me know this, but I'm just curious, where are you located? Like you mentioned, I know you're not in America, something you said earlier, but are you in an area that you would consider developing, I guess is my main question?
No, I'm in the UK, Britain, but I was born in...
You guys are developed.
yeah, just about, but if you actually come here, honestly, like, not even joking, if you actually come here, like, obviously the world's not in a good place, and a lot of, at the end of the day, in the world, like, if you're poor, it's not good. If you're rich, you're okay. And, you know, a lot of people in Britain aren't rich. So, you know, it's not, you know, like you say, developed, but a lot of things are obviously wrong here. Either way, I'm from Britain, but I was born in Nigeria, and I came to Britain when I was 2 years old. So I basically lived here all of my life. So that's why I was interested in the West African ambassadors. But they're starting a chapter in Britain, and a nomad who's like leading the project has asked me to lead it in the UK. So it'll be good to kind of get out and do that. Yeah. You know, kind of have these talks with people in, you know, the real world about these decentralized or, you know, direct ownership of things, because now I've just got a whole new perspective. Because I was just generally interested in, you know, just ownership in decentralized, you know, technologies. So then, you know, I'm very happy to get this new perspective and, you know, take it with me as well. And I do meet people and talk about it.
I'm so glad to hear it. And then congratulations. That sounds like an incredible responsibility and achievement and a joy to be able to share that with people that, you know, that don't even know yet how much they need this information. I mean, that's the same feeling that I think that I get from trying to put these resources together is, even though the questions aren't necessarily being asked all the time, you know, I think it's so important to folks. That moment will come, this event horizon, where people are so happy to realize they've got access to, or the choice to access, you know, their actual assets and equity and the freedom to do what they want with them without worrying about, you know, what the big, you know, asset managers are doing or trusting the big exchanges. Because that has burned people over and over again.
Yeah, and, you know, like, you know, we've all seen, yeah, like you said, it's burned people over and over again. We all, like, from 2021 or whatever, we all have our personal experiences in that. And, you know, if I wouldn't be in the position anyway, if it wasn't for things like this, you know, just happening to, you know, people like us. And I do think, you know, I want to amplify, you know, this voice and this debate and this, basically it's almost like, you know, the philosophy of ownership and what technologies are actually doing that for people. And, you know, things like computer share are definitely doing that for people. Things like DRSing, things like that are doing that for people. And just telling the story of decentralization and ownership in general, I think could be like a good, you know, discussion topic to to bridge that. That'll be one of my aims as well, because that's how I got here.
Love it. No story truer than one's own story.
So how regularly do you guys meet to talk about these different topics around this?
About once a week for this show, every Wednesday, around the whatever time we started, it was locally for you is when we start. And it's also released in post as a podcast. So if you end up wanting to check out any of our past episodes, like for example, we did one or several, actually a series on the history of the central depository system in the American stock market, you know, then you can definitely check that out. We're on, you know, like the Spotify's and the Apple Musics and all that.
Okay. Is it still YDRS? Is that what's called?
Taking Stock.
Taking Stock. Okay. Yeah.
We'll have John send you a link.
Oh yeah, of course, you got it.
Nice, yeah, definitely a conversation to be had. And I think you guys, it'd be nice to have it with you, like, or maybe on a podcast type platform or whatever.
Yeah, one of the nice things about X, even though we had the technical difficulties at the start, when hopefully I'll be able to rescue the recording from them. I think I should be able to do that. But in any case, we try to get some community, any listeners, live listeners, we offer them the option just to come up and ask questions, being facilitated by X Spaces. So not too many live listeners today, but if you do want to ask any questions, just raise the hand and we'll get John up and can get Valentine's perspective on whatever's on your mind. And while we're giving them a chance to muster up the courage, John, Valentine, is there anything else you wanted to cover?
No, just for mine, it's interesting to hear that you were just like you have the more rational view of Bed Bath and Beyond, I would say, which I do agree is a more rational view, because I stopped watching it so closely as I have been, but still having hope. So I hope we can not only debate that, but who knows when it's going to be finally resolved, but hope we can almost have that discussion over understanding that type of bankruptcy process and how it kind of leads into this. If it does lead into this, kind of have like a nice debate over it, a nice discussion over it, type of thing.
Yeah, I definitely think it's great for folks to learn whatever it is that interests them. And as long as, in my mind, I just have a bias towards staying grounded. And I'm always rooting for retail. It'd be great for these theories to be true and for retail to get some equity back. But I that's the funny thing about it, I guess, for me, is that if there is all this machination behind the scenes, or if there isn't, either way, the gavel will come down sometime and we'll see what happens. And regardless of whether or not there's money at the end of the tunnel, the only thing that you're going to step away from all of this focus and conversation over the last couple of years is what you learned about the process and how you can apply that to other similar processes in the future. Like that's the benefit today, because the people that are going to get equity back, if they do, are going to get it back regardless of if they paid attention to the dockets as they were coming out or not, So I hope it's about the information more than anything else.
Yeah. I think that is very true. Yeah. I agree. But yeah, so you talk about DRSing, you talk about like the history of like different like financial institutions. Like what other, other topics are you interested in that you might not have branched to or you want to find out more about?
Yeah, I think broadly speaking, John and I both, we are so interested in custody and so interested in the financial market and the inefficiencies of the legacy market and how we can try to build towards something better using this technology. So, a lot of the stuff is going to be canted towards that. Whether it's, sometimes it's current event stuff, like our most recent couple of weeks were diving into digital asset reports that were placed that were released in October by the DTCC and by the U.S. Treasury, which were a couple of fascinating reads, and probably you'd be interested as well, just to see how these gigantic entities choose to frame the eventual adoption of blockchain. And how it, you know, compares and contrasts with their current hierarchy and heuristic of how they solve the problems that they solve. Really, it can be all over the place, but it's always great to get on guests as well. And like yourself, and thanks for coming on. I know it was, maybe short notice, but John, I had a great relationship with you, and I know wanted to be able to speak with you a bit more. So I really appreciate your interest in coming to chat with us as well.
Yeah, it's great to meet you, Valentine, and you're doing some stellar work, really incredible, inspirational things.
Thank you. It's great, obviously, to meet you too as well, and to give me that alternative perspective on DRS. If you do it every week, so I think I will be a listener, and to just keep up with what you guys are doing, and to see, you know, like if you guys ever had any, you know, future topic ideas, and to see that intersection have that almost more technical, more, you know, beyond conversation, and just, you know, see where like our minds can get us on this whole, you know, topic and whole thing.
Yeah, wonderful. Always welcome. And if you're here live, you know, speaking to someone else or on a different topic, like I said, we always are, as we approach the, you know, hour and a half mark, whatever it is, then try to invite on folks. And you know, it looks like no questions today, perhaps, but that's okay. Just means we had a nice, thorough discussion. And I'll be interested to hear from you the next time we can chat, just if you did take a closer look at some of the resources we've got, and if that helped to develop or change any of your perspectives about, you know, this aspect of custody. And that's something that gets me up in the morning, is to hear about that from people. So I'm looking forward to it already, I'll tell you that.
Otherwise, I'll definitely check out the website, YDRS, and the podcast was called
Taking Stock, but we'll get you a link.
Taking Stock, yeah, no problem.
John, what about you? Any concluding thoughts? Or I know you might want to answer the question that Valentine asked as well about the types of stuff we usually cover.
Yeah, I think Valentine's definitely onto something interesting. It's obviously just a huge topic that's quite vast in scope, but definitely an example of, you know, we're dealing with what could be a redefinition of how the financial markets work, especially in this equities custody case. And there are sort of different sides of the free markets versus government regulation. And with this particular issuer and some of the events that happen around their executives, I think it, you know, really shows that there are, for good reason, hundreds of years of public policy designed to protect investors like us that do come into play. You know, unfortunately, institutions in Wall Street have used some of these unfair exemptions is a very, very nice way to put it, to undermine our interests. But even in a perfect system where we do all have that true ownership and we aren't relying on these central intermediaries anymore, still going to need to have a solid policy framework, which is exactly what we're working on now, so that, you know, investors are protected when there are, the executives at companies, they're companies run by real people. And people make mistakes. Investors, they need to be made whole in some instances. And in some instances, you know, everything falls out, and there just needs to sort of be an agreed upon framework that we can all get behind that sort of provides those protections while allowing the market to run its course. It's a really interesting perspective, and definitely something that ties into DRS as the core of everything we talk about. And another thing that I like to try to bring in as much as I can is spreading these efforts and making it into a system that's not decided by a corporate overlord that says you get money from the bankruptcy and you don't get, you know, and it in a very lengthy and arbitrary way, but instead something that's a little bit more transparent, public, and accountable to all the stakeholders at the table. which is just something that happens as we decentralize these institutions themselves through the incredible protocols at our fingertips.
Yeah, that's good. I think there's a lot, like you said, it's deep. So there's a lot to discuss over extended periods, and it's always evolving. So yeah, look forward to that. I'm just on the website now having a look as well, having a read.
Awesome. Love it.
Oh, I've seen you talk to Mr. Gensler.
Yes, sir.
What do you think of him then?
Seemed like a busy guy who was kind of forced to, he was kind to answer the questions that he was asked, but, certainly a smart guy who was able to kind of dance around the issue, not answer necessarily directly, but needed to respect his position. We had sent along, you'll find on there perhaps, a pretty lengthy paper that myself and a couple other folks had written about some of the different benefits of DRS. And I don't know if he was able to read or review that before our meeting. Certainly had the time to, when we sent it to him perspective, and knew that we got it, but maybe not in the guy's very busy in his day-to-day operations, probably. So, it's hard to say, but I broadly speaking, I think the SEC is underfunded, and I think that they, there were a lot of good steps forward, but not very many big leaps forward during his tenure as chair, and we'll have to see what happens as far as the coming years, because, of course, President-elect Trump has made it clear that he will be seeking to remove Chairman Gensler at his earliest opportunity. So there's still a lot of speculation about who an appointment might be, but certainly the paradigm is going to shift in that regard alone.
Yeah, interesting. I think I'll start with the video and actually the summary here. Because, that must definitely summarize, what you think is happening and what you think needs to change in an excellent way. Like, obviously, Mr. Gensler may or may have not read things.
I feel like he works pretty hard. I mean, I've seen him at these Congress hearings, and he's like, Senator, thank you for sending me this 80-page document last night at 9 o'clock. I had the pleasure of reading the entire thing before this hearing. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of government servants. They try their best in the positions they're given.
And we know that he's a brilliant guy who's familiar with this technology. DRS is one thing, but I'm thinking of blockchain. Like, his MIT course that's available and full on YouTube was something that I watched, years and years ago when it was posted there. I certainly learned from it. And this is someone who understands, I guess, a lot of the nuances, and maybe his goals as far as implementation may differ from retail. I don't know what his priorities are when it comes to, for example, like liquidity versus settlement, I think is kind of like the eternal battle within monetary policy, or more financial asset policy within the US. I certainly come down on the settlement is more important side, but to each their own. I thought he was a respectful person, and there was a modicum of small chat with him before the video, recorded portion of our conversation. And yeah, nice guy, works hard, maybe doesn't have all my same priorities. What are you gonna do?
Well, it'll be refreshing to have some new perspectives, and I think all the commissioners they all do a really great job. There's just one of them that gets picked out every now and then for the chair. And it's nice that they sort of balance each other out that way when they vote on different proposals. It's a pretty nice democratic system with some smart people that, you know, they seem to really be trying their best. It's crazy. Oh my God. I've never seen any organization that so consistently writes things where every document has 50 footnotes because they want to make sure that you understand every nook and cranny of the detail they're talking about.
Yeah, there's something huge to be said for that. And also just to chat out what a nice organization the SEC is in the context of other government organizations is their reception and diligence in incorporating public opinion into their decision-making process. You know, you can submit comments, submit petitions for possible changes, and really participate meaningfully in the regulatory system in a way unavailable in most sections of the U.S. government. And that's something really commendable that I wish was incorporated more in other places.
I think we might have blown over Valentine's head on that ending bit there, Chives.
Who knows? Who knows?
No, I'll see.
It's late over there.
It is.
Yeah, I've been up, like, I get up fairly early. I've been up quite a while. But no, it started at a good time and it was good to talk. So, yeah, I hope to come to the next one. And as I read and learn a bit more, we'll see what other topics, because this is proper advocacy. Like, I mean, you talk to the guy in charge of it and it's, you know, like that type of passionate feeling about it is literally like the type of people I'm looking for, because, you know, the passionate people are the ones you want to really target, not the people who are like, you know, wishy-washy at the end of the day. So I hope there are intersections between, you know, topics that we want to talk about, and we can kind of almost have just another platform. So DRS advocacy, and just, you know, maybe get that idea out to a different type of audience, you know.
Perfect. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that, and I really appreciate your having that excitement. And we'll look forward to speaking with you again at some point, certainly. And you can also more than welcome, of course, to stop by our different communities as well if you want to say hello. You know, we've got, you know, the GitHub, the Discord, etc., where you're more than welcome if you want to take a look around.
Cheers.
All right. Thanks for coming by. And I think
thank you.
Of course. I think that probably about wraps us up, eh, John? Anything else that was on your mind?
Yeah, with you there, Chives. And I mean, it'll be interesting. I love that we attract so many foreign investors, and, you know, as a long, long time frame, but as these efforts expand to other country settlement systems, I remember we were doing a discussion on the sections of the TA rules for the TAR comment, and Green on GitHub pointed out some things and spurred a little conversation, diving into some historic sources on some of the BSA implications on transfer agents. And to think that this conversation started around the centrality of American financial institutions in the sort of the monetary system and certainly security settlement system, at some point that will finally be decentralizing and becoming a little more collaborative with other countries for at least, I think, some of the more common financial infrastructure pieces that, you know, day in day pass, and the borders between these countries seem to, we talked on some contentious subjects this episode, and indeed you'll see them exemplified on the OFAC list. And to think that we might have a little bit more of a collaborative future where, you know, these value exchanges really can happen in a way that promotes that public policy, but it also actually happens efficiently so that your account doesn't randomly, I mean, I don't know if you've ever dealt with this, Shies, but I've had dozens of these accounts just randomly get frozen for suspected things, for transferring like a couple grand here and there. And I think that we might have a system that has trust, not put into these intermediaries who have to constantly be on the lookout for everything take a lot of action to halt the vast majority of time what is just false positives. It might maybe instead, if we just had a little bit more of a transparent system, that could happen a little bit more naturally through a more decentralized means, where it's just a whole lot easier to track everything.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more with so much of what you alluded to there. You know, these are systemic shortcomings, problems which are felt by people in every system that is prominent around the world at the moment. And so even if there isn't, you know, a congruency where, you know, maybe the person in the West African country or in Thailand or New Zealand, you know, maybe they don't have a Chase bank account, but they probably have the exact same issues when it comes to inconveniences to access, you know, what might have been considered owned funds. But, you know, there are these, you know, and some would say, well, they're safeguards, you know, these are things that are intended to protect people, but you know, the technology has arrived to where we don't need to use these centralized ledgers to provide protection, because they do come with a lot of shortcomings, and we can distribute that, decentralize that, trust the system itself rather than the system's management, and really have a lot more access and freedom when it comes to participating in our local economies, or, you know, if borders continue to break down due to this technology, you know, participate in the global economy as well. You know, if there's some specific company or, you know, aim or community development that speaks to an individual elsewhere, then why shouldn't they be able to participate in it with their equity? Just seems, you know, like a holistic and development focused approach to trying to build the world of tomorrow. It's going to require a really incredible base layer in order to provide people the freedom to do that. And that's what, you know, I'd say, and you'd say, and perhaps a lot of our listener base would say, this technology provides. So right there with you on that one. Good stuff. Yep. Great conversation with Valentine. Great, great follow-up. Great listeners. Thanks everybody for stopping by. And we'll look forward to seeing everybody again real soon. Have a great rest of the day and a great rest of the week.